All right, let's jump into a case that's really both heartbreaking and thought-provoking. Thing V. Lechusa. It really gets to the core of how we define emotional trauma in the eyes of the law. Just imagine this. Your child is severely injured in an accident, but because you didn't actually see the impact happen, your emotional distress is deemed invalid in court. That's the kind of tough scenario that Thing V. Lechusa brought to light, and its ripple effects are still being felt today.
Yeah, it's a landmark case that really forces us to confront some challenging questions about fairness, liability, and how the law grapples with something as complex as human emotion. Thing really just throws into sharp relief the tension between protecting individuals from undue lawsuits and ensuring that victims of negligence receive just compensation for their suffering.
Exactly. We're dealing with negligent infliction of emotional distress, or NIED, which basically means someone else's negligence caused you some serious emotional harm. And before Thing v. Lechusa, California courts were using the foreseeability standard from Dillon v. Legge, which was, much more case by case.
Right, and Dillon just left a lot of room for interpretation, which led to some inconsistency in how these cases were decided. Thing v. Lechusa aimed to bring more clarity and predictability to NID claims, but as we'll see, it also raised some serious concerns about potentially shutting out legitimate claims.
So let's get into the specifics of what happened in Thing. The facts of the case are pretty gut-wrenching. We have Maria Thing, whose son, John, is hit by a car, driven by James Lechusa. Maria wasn't there at the exact moment of impact, but she was close by and rushed to the scene when her daughter told her what happened.
And when Maria arrived, she found John unconscious and badly injured. For a moment, she even thought he was dead. It's important to emphasize this point because it really underscores the intensity of the emotional trauma she experienced. This wasn't just some distant observer happening upon an accident scene. This was a mother confronted with the horrifying possibility of losing her child.
It's a truly awful situation. So how did this tragic event end up in front of the California Supreme Court? There must have been quite a legal journey to get to that point.
Yeah, there was. Initially, the trial court sided with the driver, Lechusa. But the appeals court reversed that decision, applying that more flexible Dillon standard we talked about. That back and forth just created uncertainty, and that's what ultimately pushed the case up to the California Supreme Court. Everyone was just looking for a definitive answer on how to handle these types of claims.
So the stage was set for a landmark decision, and the core question at the heart of it was, can a parent who didn't directly witness the accident, but who was undeniably close and deeply affected by it, claim damages for their emotional distress?
Precisely. And the court's answer to that question would have far-reaching consequences for NID claims, not just in California, but potentially across the entire country. The majority opinion in Thing v. Lechusa decided to establish a very specific three-part test to determine if someone could claim NID from witnessing an accident.
Okay, so let's break down this three-part test because it seems like that's the crux of what Eng is all about.
Absolutely. The first part is pretty straightforward. You have to have a close relationship with the victim. Usually, this means being immediate family, like a parent or child or spouse.
That makes sense. It's about recognizing that those relationships carry a deeper level of emotional connection and therefore potential for harm.
Right. But the second part is where Thing really departed from the Dillon standard. To claim NIED, you must be present at the scene when the injury occurs, and you have to be aware that it's happening as it unfolds. No showing up later, no hearing about it secondhand. You have to be right there witnessing it in real time.
Wow, so that's a pretty strict requirement. It seems like that would automatically exclude a lot of people who might experience genuine distress. What was the court's reasoning behind such a hard line?
Well, the majority opinion placed a lot of emphasis on preventing what they called infinite liability. They were worried that without these specific limitations, any minor fender bender could turn into a massive pileup of lawsuits from anyone who happened to be nearby or who heard about it later and felt upset.
So the court was prioritizing protecting people from being bombarded with lawsuits, even if it meant some people who experienced real trauma wouldn't have a legal avenue to pursue compensation.
That's right. They were aiming for a balance, but you can see how that approach might raise concerns about fairness for victims.
Definitely seems like a tricky balancing act.
Yeah.
What about the third part of the test?
The third part focuses on the severity of the emotional distress. It has to be serious, way more intense than what a random person observing the same accident from a distance might feel.
So it sounds like they were trying to weed out claims from people who might have been startled or upset by the accident, but who weren't truly traumatized by it.
Exactly. They wanted to make sure that NID claims were reserved for cases of severe emotional harm, not just general upset or anxiety.
It sounds like the court was trying to create a very clear-cut, black-and-white standard for NID claims. But as you mentioned earlier, there were some dissenting opinions in Thing v. Lecusa. What did those justices have to say about this three-part test?
You're right. It wasn't a unanimous decision. It was a 4-3 decision. So the court was pretty divided on this issue. And those dissenting opinions are really important because they highlight the potential problems with such a rigid test.
Okay. I'm really curious to hear more about those dissenting opinions.
Yeah.
Why did those justices disagree with the majority's ruling? Did they think the three-part test was too restrictive?
They did. In fact, one of the justices, Justice Kaufman, actually wanted to go even further than the majority. He thought NID claims should be limited only to people who were in the zone of danger themselves during the accident, meaning they were at risk of physical harm.
Wow, that's even stricter than the three-part test. It seems like he was really concerned about limiting the scope of NID claims. What about the other dissenting justices? What were their arguments?
Justices Broussard and Mosk presented a really compelling argument against the majority's approach. Their main point was, what if you arrive at the scene, like literally seconds after the impact, but the trauma you experience is every bit as real and severe as someone who witnessed it? Is it fair to say your suffering is legally invalid just because of a tiny difference in timing?
That does seem like a really tough pill to swallow.
Mm.
If the emotional harm is the same, why should a few seconds make such a big difference in the eyes of the law? Did those dissenting justices have any particularly powerful quotes that capture their perspective on this?
There's one that really stands out. They wrote that the majority was groping for a bright line only to grasp an admittedly arbitrary rule. They felt that the three-part test just didn't reflect the messy, unpredictable reality of how people experience and process trauma.
That's a really powerful statement. It highlights the inherent tension in trying to create rigid legal rules to deal with something as fluid and complex as human emotion. So we have this sharp divide in the court, with the majority emphasizing clarity and limiting liability, and the dissent arguing for a more nuanced approach that recognizes the unique circumstances of each case.
Exactly. And this debate didn't end with Thing v. Lecusa. It continues to shape how we approach NIED claims, and it raises fundamental questions about how we balance fairness and predictability within the legal system.
So we've got this divided court and a landmark ruling and a debate that's still raging today. What happened in the aftermath of Thing v. Lecusa? Did it just kind of fade into legal history, or did it have a real impact on how these types of cases are handled?
Oh, Thing had a huge impact. It really shifted the landscape of NIED claims, especially in California. After this decision, it became much harder to win these types of cases. The strictness of that three-part test created a much higher bar for what was considered legally valid emotional distress.
So one court case in California had ripple effects across the country. That's pretty amazing. Did other states follow California's lead on this, or did they go in a different direction?
It's a mixed bag, actually. Some states looked at Thing and thought, okay, this makes sense. Let's adopt similar bright line rules for NIET. They liked the clarity and predictability that the three-part test provided, but other states stuck with the more flexible Dillon approach, where they look at the specific facts of each case to determine if the emotional distress was foreseeable and reasonable. So, you know, there's still a lot of variation across the U.S. in how these claims are handled.
That's interesting. It seems like there's no easy answer here. It's this ongoing struggle between wanting to have clear legal boundaries and wanting to make sure victims are treated fairly. Do you think that tension is at the heart of what makes Thing v. Lecusa such a controversial and enduring case?
Absolutely. Thing forces us to confront some really fundamental questions. Is it more important to have clear-cut legal rules, even if it means some people with genuine emotional suffering might not be compensated? Or should we prioritize trying to achieve a just outcome in each individual case, even if that makes the legal process more complex and unpredictable? There are valid arguments on both sides, and that's why Thing continues to spark debate and influence legal thinking.
Okay, so let's bring it back to the listener for a second. If they only remember one thing from our deep dive into Thing v. Lecusa, what should it be? What's the key takeaway here?
I think the most important takeaway is that Thing represents a shift in how we approach emotional distress in legal terms. It highlights a trend towards prioritizing predictability and limiting liability, even if it means drawing some hard lines that might seem unfair in individual cases.
And that tension is something we still grapple with today, right? Where do we draw the line between protecting people from frivolous lawsuits and ensuring that legitimate claims of emotional harm are taken seriously?
Exactly. And there's no easy answer. Thingvi Lichusa forces us to think critically about these issues and to consider the trade-offs involved in any legal approach to something as complex as human emotion.
So to wrap things up, let's leave our listeners with something to ponder. We've talked about the specifics of Thing, the three-part test, the dissenting opinions, and the impact it's had on the legal landscape. But here's a question that takes it a step further. How would the Thing test apply in a modern context, like a mass shooting, where you might have dozens of people who witnessed the event or arrived moments later to a scene of utter chaos and trauma? Would their emotional suffering be considered legally valid under the strict criteria established by Thing? It's a tough question with no easy answers, but it shows how the legacy of Thing v. Lichusa is still very much alive, shaping how we approach these incredibly complex issues in a world that's constantly changing.